The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Shah, Director of Content and Strategy at Edison, and that's one of the most respected research houses in the UK. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Justin, pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's good to get you on because, of course, you know, you have lots of investment ideas, and so we can pick your brain and about the stocks and strategy as well. But before we start that, Neil, for people, you know, not familiar with you, just give us a brief background as to, you know, how you came to be where you are today.
So I've been with Edison since the January 2005, so a long time. And this is the business that we built. Mm-hmm. Before that, I helped set up a hedge fund, Tusker Capital, and for a couple of years. And I learned my training really came as a sell side analyst at Goldman, where I was covering construction, building materials. And before that, I got my ACA qualification at Price Waterhouse.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, for people not familiar with buy side and sell side, explain that, because some people think sell side is shorting, probably, and it's not, is it? Explain that, if you could, quickly.
No, they're shortcut descriptors. So the sell side is the traditional investment banking community who are producing research and broking that to asset managers. The buy side is the buyers of, the stocks, the content that those investment banks are sort of putting out. Yeah. They're the asset management community.
Yeah, exactly. Now, let's talk about, so you've got this, the Illuminator. Explain what that is.
So, I mean, it's something which as an analyst, when I was at Goldman, my boss left about 1 year after I sort of joined, and it was one of those necessity is the mother of invention. I needed a framework to help me sort of decipher which stocks perform well and which were going to struggle. It came to my attention because there's a guy I knew who actually turned down partnership at Goldman because he ran this for private clients and was making more money doing this than he would have done as a partner at Goldman. And he had a very simple approach to stock picking, which is it's built on the efficient market hypothesis that, you know, I can't tell you whether this tech company is better than that tech company or this biotech is better than the other. Mm. But I can tell you what the attributes of a high quality company are. Yeah. And there's a range of things that you tend to look for a high quality company, including, you know, recurring demand patterns, above GDP growth. So what's their turnover growing at? What's their revenues and profitability growing at? Cash conversion, a balance sheet which is not too leveraged. So you want it, you know, you do want some leverage just for the sort of tax efficiency, but a balance sheet which can withstand economic shocks. Good ROE, which is means that, you know, the growth is funded off their own balance sheet rather than keeping on coming back to shareholders. So it's a range of measures I use. It boils down to sort of 10 factors. I turn those into numerical proxies, track various estimates on companies, and build a portfolio, model portfolio of 10 names. We've been running it since, I think, 2008. Just to give you some numbers around it, the one-year performance of the Illuminator, it's up 50% against an old share, which was up 21%. On a three-year basis, it was up 130% against an old share, which was up 10%. And since inception, I guess since 2008, 1,785% up against an all share that did 136%. And in that is a story of compounding. It's just, if you pick high quality companies that are going to be continually growing their earnings, it's really that sort of strong power of compounding coming through into those performance numbers.
Yeah, I like those factors. So 10 stocks pretty much, they fit your characteristics. And that's really important, is having a strategy like that, because, you know, I've got a similar sort of acronym that I use. It's called Schedules. And essentially that's coming from looking at the companies that have done well, and I like micro cap stocks, so they're higher risk. But with that, you have to, you know, look at the risk and identify it and see the upside. But it's always good to have some kind of strategy, isn't it? And building and evolving that strategy based on, you know, previous successful companies, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it did create some discipline. I think, you know, I've been doing this a long time. The most successful managers have a framework and a strategy and a certain amount of discipline. It takes away the emotion.
Yeah, yeah. And let's be honest, you know, there are thousands of companies. And I said to people, it's sometimes you can have, you know, option paralysis and you don't know what to look for. So if you bring in this framework, it limits it. And I'm not saying you'll capture all the winners, but you don't need to, you know. You just need to make sure the ones you pick are going to do well. And so, yeah, and just looking at your characteristics here briefly. So you got one, high quality product or service; two, superior management; three, larger than average compound earning; four, consistency and predictability; five, projected annual growth in earnings; six, balance sheet strength; seven, high profitability; eight, free cash flow; nine, international competitiveness; and 10, valuation, reasonable purchase price. And all of those seem like common sense, but you're right. When emotion comes into it and people don't have a framework, they can just lose track, can't they, of what they're looking for, you know? And you can pick any old thing, really, can't they, you know?
Yeah.
So let's look at some stocks then, Neil. Go, if you could, go through some that you think are looking good and, you know, have that sort of potential for the future still.
Okay. So let me just, I'll trot off and share with you what our top 10 in the Illuminator is so that, you know, people can take a quick look themselves. Sitting on the Illuminator right now, Softcat, Kainos, 888 Holdings, Rightmove, YouGov, Plus 500, Renew Holdings, Abcam, Games Workshop, and FDM Group. So that's the mix that we're looking at right now. We have a longer list in terms of, you know, companies coming up, etc. But to illustrate what we're talking about, let me pick out a few companies in here and I think why they're doing well. Starting with Games Workshop, which is an Edison client. Ultimately, if you look through everything, it's you know, the beauty of Games Workshop is it's a compounder. It's got a very strong market position. It's a niche. It's the only quotient company providing exposure to the tabletop miniature gaming, an area which is, you know, growing. I think the broad market stats is that market is growing at 9%. You compare that to GDP growth, you've got a bigger number than the GDP growth, and it's run with very strong financial discipline as well, and they've got a history of outperforming, so, you know, consistently been beating numbers. They manage their cash flows very well and their capital very well, meaning that surplus capital is returned to shareholders in the form of special dividends or quarterly dividends. It's a business which I think has got the potential to continue scaling. There's some additional royalty income that's going to be sort of coming in for this company. So one which I would sort of certainly put on people's radar. And for that growth, I mean, you're looking at high PE numbers. So our projections are about 28, 29 times next year's next year's earnings is where I think you're going to be looking at. So it's you have to pay for that growth, but you get rewarded for it. So if you take a look at the sort of historic share price increases, etc., it's done incredibly well. Another company which I quite like in that.
Can I just ask you quickly about Game Workshop there? I mean, let's be honest, it's phenomenal performance even since 2017. It was, you could have bought it sort of almost just sub £6. They're now 98 quid a share, which is nice. But when you talk about emotion, they're removing the emotion. And at the moment, Game Workshop share price is having a bit of a sell-off. It's gone from 120 quid down to 98 quid. And I suppose when you have a model, you can remove or disconnect, can't you, the share price from the business performance? Because as long as the business is still performing, I suppose, and within your metrics, you don't sort of bother, do you? Do you look? I mean, that share price dip currently. Do you bother with that? Does it bother you at all?
No, I mean, I think if you manage a portfolio, you can top up on weakness and take profits. You can do a little bit of that, but usually, I mean, what it's telling you is that you ought to stick with it. And I've you know, just going back into history, the Illuminator picked up ASOS when it quite early on, and it, you know, ASOS had this sort of meteoric sort of share price ride, and I'd keep being challenged by people saying, "Well, should you take it out now? Shouldn't you take it out?" And I just, you know, what the analysis suggests that it should stay in. And it, you know, what you would have done is just missed the next leg of growth if you had taken it out. So for Games Workshop, I think there's further to go. And it really is about, you know, them coming out of COVID and continuing to sort of expand on their existing business.
Should I
talk about another name?
Yeah, go for it.
So the other business which I think is quite interesting is YouGov. Again, you're paying a pretty hefty PE for it. I mean, it's on 70 times forward earnings. But I think it's showing all the attributes of a business which is transitioning into something which is really interesting. So, you know, I think most people will know what YouGov is because you would have seen their sort of online polls, the sort of, you know, the particularly popular side of it, which is that they do a lot of political polls, etc. But this is a data and analytics business, and they've got a big panel that they've built in terms of finding out information. The reason I think it's really interesting is that the world as we know it, if you imagine that e-commerce has grown so dramatically, there's quite a lot of change coming downstream in terms of you know, how you can track people's preferences, the changes to the, you know, cookies, etc. And I think YouGov's got this very unique position in terms of being able to provide insights onto the market, and why I think, you know, the people are taking notice of the business. So this is this idea of, you know, we look for something which is unique, and I think YouGov is there. You're paying for that growth because ultimately, if this takes off the way we think it might do, you know, there's a lot of potential in the business. And then I'll pick out one other because, you know, I guess a lot of people are always interested in the housing market. So Rightmove's on the list. And, you know, I guess the story of Rightmove is what you see in what we call platform stocks. So here is the economics of, if you've got scale and a dominant market position, you're going to make phenomenal returns. And Rightmove has this very dominant position in the sort of housing market. You know, when you're looking to purchase, et cetera, it tends to be one of the few sites that people will go to. Estate agents are compelled. I know there's resistance because they feel there's sort of leakage to their fees by using Rightmove. But to attract buyers, to get properties noticed, I think you have to use Rightmove. If you believe that you know, we're going to be a nation which wants to keep owning its properties, there's going to be interest, there's still shortages effectively in housing supply, I think this is a great little business which, given its market position, should continue to deliver great returns and sort of continue to see, you know, compound earnings growth coming through. So those are just three names from the Illuminator. There's some other names which I'm happy to talk about which are outside the Illuminator if people want to look at, you know, some value plays and some alternative plays.
Yeah. Can I just ask you on Rightmove there? Do you concern yourself with, I mean, of course, when you get sort of the early move advantage and the top dog there, you know, the market leader, but of course, when you got margins that high, then you get competitors coming in, and you see quite a few now competitors and people trying to change the way things are done in that space. Does that worry you that, you know, competitors are coming in there?
I think it's experience says that it's very, very hard to displace such a dominant market position. So there's so much. It's one of those advantages of scale. It's very hard unless you're throwing huge amounts of money at it. Yeah. It's very, very difficult to sort of dislodge that position. So I mean, there are new sort of entrants coming into the market. I just think that those new entrants have got a really, really steep hill to climb to compete against Rightmove. And I think that the, you know, that dominant market position will allow them to maintain margins. I mean, you know, the reason the numbers come through so well for Rightmove is they've built the platform, you know, so all that investment's done, and now it's just a case of, you know, continue to expand what they do. It leads to just some great cash generation coming through for the business.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Marvelous. Oh, sorry, go on, Neil, go with the rest of them as well, if you had other ideas you're saying.
Well, so not on off the Illuminator, one stock which, so, you know, there's been this debate over the last year in terms of growth versus value, and I wanted to put a value play out on the table. So it's a client of Edison's, a business that we've got to know over a long period of time, Severfield. So if you, it's a specialist in design, fabrication, and the erection of structural steelworks and building construction. So basically, just think of infrastructure. It's one of those that the valuation is very attractive. It's on a, you know, 10 times PE for sort of current year earnings, dropping to about 9.5 times for next year. But, and it's also yielding. They pay a dividend, so around 4% dividend yield being paid out. The reason I think it's interesting is that it's attractively priced. We do think it's a play on UK infrastructure spend. You know, we do think that the UK is going to continue having to invest in the sort of underlying infrastructure. And then they've got an Indian JV. So if you look at that and the sort of trajectory of what we think is going to happen in the UK, they've got a very strong market position. You know, they should be able to sort of capitalize on the UK infrastructure side. You're getting, you know, the Indian JV for almost nothing, and over time, I think that will turn into something. So, one which I wanted to sort of draw people's attention to, if you wanted something which is interestingly priced and worth taking a look at.
What's the ticker there, Neil? Just say the ticker.
Severfield. SFR, I think. Let me just double check that for you.
Yes, Severfield, that's right. It is. Yeah, SFR, yeah, that's Severfield. Right.
SFR is the other one. And then I thought it might be interesting to take a look at. So I don't know if on the sort of smaller cap end of things, one of the businesses I think is doing some interesting things is Checkit. Workflow management software. So, you know, it's effectively sort of connecting sort of deskless mobile workers to a sort of work environment. It's, you know, the thing I like about it is it's sort of business model. It's one of those sort of recurring revenue streams which they're looking to build quite early on in the company. But we like what we see from a sort of execution perspective. You know, I think at present it's sort of loss making. So you need to really look at it on an EV to sales basis. It's about 1.9 times 2022, 1.6 times. So, you know, for a technology business, not reasonably, not unreasonably priced, and one which I think is worth sort of putting a little bit of time and attention into.
Excellent stuff. Well, I'll just hit follow on that. So on Vox Market, so I'll get the RNSs when they come out. So yeah, very interesting. And when they had 16th was their interims, wasn't it? Yeah, so they had annual recurring revenue 6.6 million at period end for the 6 months, of course. Cash of 8.5 million. Yeah, cool. I've heard of them. But thanks for your look on that. It's good stuff, Neil. And